More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Freedom Hut. This is the Best of Buck Daily Podcast. The top stories of the day from the Buck Sexton Show. For more Buck, head to BuckSexton.com. And remember to subscribe to the podcast.
Welcome, friends. Great to have you with me here on the Buck Sexton Show. And look, let's all just take a little victory lap. Let's all just let it sink in for a moment. Mike Pence gets an A. Great job. Great job in the debate last night. Honestly, I thought substantially more effective than even I had anticipated. I thought he was going to be pretty good. But this was a reminder that Pence is an undervalued asset of the Trump administration, at least in many people's eyes. This guy has been a steady hand, competent, solid, but also gentlemanly, respectful. He's a great yin yang, a great contrast, you know, counterpart to Trump because of all this. And Kamala was, how do we put this gently, a disaster. A disaster. But that shouldn't surprise anyone. As I've been saying to you, she wasn't strong even in the Democrat primary at all. Nobody thought that she was doing a good job then. But so how do you know that the Democrats are particularly worried about all this? How do you know that the Democrat Party doesn't feel like things went their way last night? Just by all the whining today, all the nonsense and the misdirection. He was mansplaining. They're saying that a lot. Vice presidential debates don't matter. Let's remember, there's sexism in our politics. Voters aren't ready for an assertive woman. And time to change the debate format. These are talking points coming from Democrats in the media that roughly translate to our side got crushed last night. Let's just pretend that never happened. Now, look, the polls are all still showing Biden ahead in a lot of swing states. And, you know, if the election were held today, the pollsters would have you believe it's likely Biden would win. I don't believe that personally. I think that they'll be wrong again, or they'll all magically be within the margin of error, but always in the margin of error favoring Biden. That's what they like to do. Well, it's up. You know, it's a 2-point race, but everyone thinks Biden's up 2 points and it's a 2 to 3 point margin of error. No, I don't see that. The vice presidential debate, as bad as it was for the Democrats, is not going to change the course of this election, most likely. But this is, on the other hand, also all about just those small slices of the electorate, right? The voters out there who are thinking, look, I just want, and I don't say this with any disrespect or any judgment. I understand there are going to be people out there who are good folks, who are responsible and, you know, worthwhile, productive members of their community, wherever we're talking about, in Florida and Ohio and Michigan and New Hampshire and so on and so forth. And they're just saying, look, whoever's going to bring back the economy the best, that's who I'm voting for. I don't care about anything else. I understand that. I don't agree necessarily that's the way people should view politics, but I can understand how people would feel that way. And for that group, for those that are going into this looking for who would do a better job on issues of actual management of the United States government and the economy, I don't think you could have watched last night's debate and come away thinking anything other than, so the Democrats are evasive, dishonest, and incompetent. That's really what you're getting. And there's been so much effort from the Democrat-aligned media to try to convince people that that's not true, but you could see it last night. No, in fact, they want you to believe that Donald Trump is terrible. He's basically Hitler. His vice president is a stooge and has no thoughts of his own, doesn't do anything. They say all these horrible things about him all the time. But when they can't be the ones who are just writing the narrative, when they can't be staring into the prompters on CNN and MSNBC doing the work of the DNC while pretending to be journalists, all the rest of us sit around and see what's really happening and realize that this is a weak Democrat ticket, folks. It's weak. It is. And that has not always been the case. And I'm not judging that from what I think or like. It's what the American people want from an administration. These Democrats are not going to provide that. So they're trying to convince people they're something other than what they actually are. And the biggest wins, and we'll go through some of the specifics on the policies and the exchanges, and there were a lot of them, and they were worthwhile in this debate because there were fewer interruptions, and the moderator wasn't trying to do an audition for NBC News because she was already at C-SPAN, so what difference does it make? There were some good moments, but the best single thing, I mean, the one issue where you knew that they had to push, and it didn't come from the moderator, it should be noted. It came from Pence. He teed this up. He followed up. He made it very clear. They will simply not tell you. Kamala Harris and Joe Biden and the DNC will not allow you to know, will not make a claim on either side of whether they will pack the Supreme Court. And that's just really all you have to know. Here's Kamala trying to dance around it, trying to avoid addressing the issue. Play clip 9.
Court. Yeah, let's talk about packing the court then. Let's talk about the fact. Yeah, I'm about to. So the Trump-Pence administration has been, because I sit on the Senate Judiciary Committee, Susan, as you mentioned, and I've witnessed the appointments for lifetime appointments to the federal courts, district courts, courts of appeal. People who are purely ideological, people who have been reviewed by legal professional organizations and found to have been not competent, are substandard. And do you know that of the 50 people who President Trump appointed to the Court of Appeals for lifetime appointments, not one is black? This is what they've been doing. You want to talk about packing a court? Let's have that discussion.
That's amazing. People should listen to that answer on a vice presidential debate stage for years to come about what you don't want to do as a politician. Pretend that you're being earnest, pretend that you're being forthcoming, and then for everyone to see, show them that you're actually just completely full of it. Let's have that conversation. You were asked a question. You're not asked a question as to whether you would like to have the conversation. You were asked yes or no. Would your administration or the administration you'd be a part of as the vice president, although really should probably be the guy, I mean, sorry, the gal running things. What do you think? Would you do this? Wouldn't give an answer. They will not answer. How can you trust a presidential ticket that on an issue as massive as packing the Supreme Court, which people brought up until now, even on the left, as, you know, FDR was threatening to do this, and that would have been really norm-busting and tyrannical and undoing our system and changing the balance of powers and everything else. How can you get away with not answering that question? There's no reason other than they don't want to tell their base they won't upend the system and remake it in the image of the radical left. And they definitely don't want to tell independent swing state voters, yeah, we're full of it. We actually will do whatever we have to do in the pursuit of power. Whatever we have to do, we will do. And that doesn't sit well with folks, especially when you've had years now of Democrats saying that Trump is undermining our sacred institutions. They are trying to remake, to destroy and then remake our sacred institutions. By the way, not that they're really sacred either. I don't even like that term. But there was that evasion. Then there were other things. The lies that came out. Pence squarely, for anyone who is not utterly delusional, last night, Vice President Pence destroyed the lie that Donald Trump said that there were good people on both sides, and also pointed out that this is a man who has Jewish grandchildren, but the left keeps calling him a neo-Nazi. They think that that's in any way fair or sensible or acceptable, and it's not. I mean, they're disgusting. They are disgusting, but that's what they're doing. And I thought Pence was excellent on that issue. I mean, he crushed the vile lie about Trump's Charlottesville comment once and for all for anyone who's not suffering from stage 5 Trump derangement syndrome. And I wish the president had been able to lay into it when he was going up against Biden the last time around, but at least Pence got to it last night. We also saw what I've been saying all along, and it's just objective. It's just obvious at this point. It's something that you would pick up on very quickly. Kamala Harris is just not very likable. She is a product of California machine politics. She's never had to appeal to people who aren't solid left-wing Democrats. She's never had to appeal to moderates or swing voters. She just figured out who the power players were in some ways that were also unethical that no one even brings up anymore. But she figures out who the power players were and ensconced herself in the Democrat apparatus of California and just sort of worked her way up by befriending the right people, making the right allies, and running in the safest of safe places to be a left-wing Democrat, particularly one who's a minority female, because as we know, diversity, they don't just say it's a strength on the left anymore. I mean, diversity is a requirement for many things. California just made diversity, meaning racial and ethnic diversity, a requirement for company boards that are set up in California. You have to have at least one minority board member in California now. So Kamala comes from that left-wing machinery of the Democrat Party. She's never had to be in a really tough race. She's never had to convince people that don't agree with every poll-tested political consultant created phrase that comes out of her mouth. And it was there for all to see last night. And no one could cover for her. There was no one to bail her out. And she wasn't very nice either. She's just not that likable. Now, maybe as a person one-on-one, I mean, I don't know. I've never met the lady. Maybe she's fine. I have no idea. But we're talking about her political persona. We're talking about the way that she is perceived by those who are supposed to vote for her to put her in a position of power and leadership. And truth is, she kind of makes Hillary look likable. Hello? They really thinks that people thought that Hillary was about as unlikable as one could be. But no, I think Kamala actually was in some ways even more so, just because she hasn't even had to be through the battles. She hasn't even really had to be through the political fights. Feels like it was all kind of handed to this person. And now she's just been handed the vice presidency so she could be handed the presidency. You're like, what has she done to earn any of this? Why? It was a very kind of interchangeable prosecutor and then made the right friends in the Democrat power circles and became the state attorney general and then ran for Senate. And now she's going to be vice president. Based on what? What's her big policy issue? Now, perhaps we're digging in too much on the holes in Kamala's record or just the lack of an impressive record. But also, she was a representative of the Biden ticket last night. And when you allow somebody to represent Joe Biden's political campaign and you actually force them to answer some questions or at least pose real questions to them, it's all very flimsy. It all falls apart very rapidly. And that's what you saw on that stage. One of my favorites is the issue of fracking. Because you know where fracking really, you don't want to talk about banning fracking in places like Pennsylvania. Not good. Not a good move. So what do the Democrats do when they come up against a difficult position that they've taken in the past, now when they can present it to the full view of the American people? Oh, we'll get into that.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have been
juicy.
The podcast would have taken a left turn.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
More Than a Movie is back with season 2 of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carlo Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Juni. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. On Purpose is dedicated to helping you be happier, healthier, and more healed. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how he got comfortable with fear, navigating the changes in relationships, and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern. This conversation shows a never-seen-before side to Orlando Bloom and his unique life journey.
I think we all struggle sometimes to really deeply believe that we are enough, that we're valued, that we're valuable. You know, we're imprinted by our parents from the age of 0 to 7, right? Mm. I'm constantly trying to go, like, how do I detach from this idea of, is that my baggage? It doesn't look like my baggage. I mean, I know, okay, that's mine. Let's unpack that.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening to the Best of Buck Daily Podcast. Get more from Buck by following him on social media at Buck Sexton on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget to visit BuckSexton.com.
There's certainly more policy to discuss, and I want to do that with you today from the takeaways from this debate. But first, can we just have some fun with the, oh, Kamala is wonderful media? She's really, her core constituency is the editorial page of the New York Times. And if you're wondering, who are the biggest Kamala supporters? It's people who work for establishment media, people who are big producers in Hollywood, left-wing hedge fund managers. They love Kamala. They think she's great. You know, she's great. But just normal Americans, and I'm talking about Democrats now, they're like, nah, not so much. Sorry, not into it. And the media now has to do this whole act where they come up with explanations for why it was such a tremendously lackluster performance last night. Here is Fake Tapper explaining, you know, trying to come up with a rationale for why Kamala got crushed. I mean, straight up trounced in that debate. Play two.
I wonder if a woman candidate feels like she can't push as much or steamroll as much as, say, Mike Pence can for fear of seeming and offending some segment of the electorate. I'm not saying it should be that way, but I'm wondering if it is that way.
Yeah, I'm just asking questions. Like, maybe it's sexism. I'm just asking questions, though. You know, just asking questions. Just floating an idea. Just putting out some analysis. I'm a straight reporter, man. I don't do opinion. You don't do clean up on aisle 7 for Kamala's disastrous performance? Because that's what that sounds like. Oh, she can't be assertive enough? She was nasty to him. To Pence. At different parts during the debate. And I think she thought, because of what we had seen with President Trump, that maybe she'd be able to goad Pence into the same kind of... Look, I thought Trump was a little too aggressive in some parts of the last debate. You know that I've said that. Where it was just counterproductive for him, and that's what I'm really focused on. But now you look at the way that the media is trying to convince people that there was sexism involved here or something like that. It's completely absurd. The problem is, when Kamala Harris is asked, are you going to ban fracking? She says, absolutely not. When both her and Joe Biden have been like, yeah, fracking is evil. Get rid of it. On the campaign trail in this election. That's the problem. The problem is she repeats the Charlottesville lie and is so sanctimonious and smug while she does it. And you look at her, you go, what is this? We all have access to the transcript. It's online. You can watch the video of that press conference. And you can also just think through, does anyone really believe the president of the United States, who wants to stay president, get reelected as president, that he's going to openly praise neo-Nazi? Of course not. They don't really think he did that. They just think they can get away with saying he did that, which has been the game all along here. MSNBC had a comment. You know, there's more of this, of the sexism thing. MSNBC had a commentator who, there's so many of them, but he's got to hear some of it. It's kind of fun to hear that. I don't know what to do, because no serious person could watch that debate and think anything other than, well, Kamala was outclassed on presentation and on policy. That's it. Everything else is kind of a waste. Everything else is make-believe time. So let's get into some of that make-believe time. Here's someone on MSNBC, never heard of this person before. Play 29.
The things that jumped out for me were the way that he seemed extremely misogynistically dismissive of the other two women who were there in conversation with him. He talked all over the moderator like she didn't even matter, and then certainly had, you know, a bit of disregard for Kamala Harris, and just kept on going, even with a calm tone. And I think that, you know, he showed himself out to be, in a very evangelical way, I'd say, someone who is dismissive and disregards women. I didn't like that tone and tenor. I also didn't like the fact that he just lies through his teeth. The guy is responsible for 211,000, I think now, deaths due to COVID. He's in charge of the committee.
He's responsible for, I mean, how much stupid can you fit into one soundbite is a fair question you could ask me right now. First of all, the misogyny that she claims was there, Vice President Pence, I thought was very gracious and quite respectful of Kamala Harris. He started out the debate by saying, honored to be here on the stage with you. He very clearly established a level of respect that I don't think was always reciprocated from Kamala, with all the faces and the, you know, the pursing of the lips and the rolling of the eyes and all the things that she was doing when he's talking. I mean, that may play well with the MSNBC audience, but for people who really want to know what these individuals who are vying for a very consequential role, very consequential job, they don't like those kinds of little games. And but then, of course, this commentator at the end says that he's responsible for 200,000 deaths. Does anyone think that with a Biden administration, I just want to, what how many deaths would we have with a Biden administration? I'd like to know what the Biden supporters think. 10,000. 20,000. Is that really what they're going to claim? We're going to have, if that were true, we would have by far, we'd have a lower death rate per capita population than any country in the world that has actually been hit by this thing. That's over, you know, 10 million people. We got 350 million people in this country. They have 20,000 dead in Argentina. So, or 330 million people in this country, I should say. Although how many illegals there are is still an open question. They're living in a fantasy land. That's not surprising, I suppose. Oh, speaking of fantasy land, that's a perfect transition point here to Mika, who just hates our president. Just hates him.
Who turns on the TV in the morning and goes, you know, I really need to know what Mika Brzezinski thinks of something from her deep expertise of having her hair and makeup done and reading off a prompter for many years. I really need to hear what she thinks. I just wonder about that. Same thing with Joe Scarborough, by the way. But I'm curious. I kind of want to meet the person who finds Mika insightful. Or Joe, for that matter. But here she is, living in a truly alternative universe. But what else are you going to do? You're a flack. You're a hack. You're there to do a job, which is to promote the Democrat candidate. Here is Mika. Play 30.
Oh, I thought Kamala Harris was fabulous, and she was disciplined, she was strong, she kept a fine balance in terms of tone, which, you know, would be a challenge for any woman debuting on the national stage like that as a vice presidential candidate. She was reality versus whatever was happening on the other side of the stage, and she really used every skill in her toolbox to deliver a clear, almost, you know, near perfect performance. She was right on, spot on.
A near perfect performance. This is awesome. You know why I made you listen to this? I mean, there's a reason for it, not just because I find it amusing, although that's a big part of it. That what she just gave you is what the lib hack media that's a perfect. You could use that as an exemplar. That would be the boilerplate, the template of what you say after debate with a Democrat involved, where you're just going to say the same thing about them no matter what, because you don't care, because you are a cheerleader for them. You are a booster. You are rooting for and actively trying to help them win. This is what you would have. This is what you would say if you hadn't seen the debate and you walked on set in the morning. You hadn't even watched a minute of it, but you know you're a Democrat. You know you're a phony and a fraud. And you got to support the Democrat candidate no matter what. So that's it. Oh, she was fabulous, disciplined, strong. He said this about anybody in the debate. What about her not answering critical questions and really not answering them? I mean, it was clear that she was like, nah, just not going to answer. Sorry. Oh. Okay. There was nothing about her performance that was fabulous. And there was certainly no reasonable human being who, remember, reasonable is the caveat there. No reasonable human being who saw that and thought, you know what? Kamala was perfect. Yeah. So perfect that Democrat voters in the primary were like, we have no interest in this person whatsoever. But we appreciate that the New York Times, the Washington Post have tried to foist her upon us. Look, I do believe that for a lot of the journos, they have a nostalgia. They have a PTSD from Trump. They have post-traumatic, actually it should be PTTD, post-traumatic Trump syndrome or disorder, post-traumatic Trump disorder. That's what they've got. They can't adjust to this new world. They can't deal with this new world. And they also have this crippling nostalgia for Obama. And I think our media, which is diversity obsessed and deeply superficial. I mean, our national news media is full of vain, really a bunch of vain, self-loving, but secretly self-loathing idiots. I think that they see some similarities in background, in presentation, in storyline between Obama and Kamala. And that for them is enough. That for them is all that is necessary, right? They think that they can maybe get back to the great old days, the 8 years of the Obama administration. And so they add her to Biden. And what do you have? Obama 2.0, a third term of the glorious Obama administration. That's to me how we got to this point, because on skill, on the electoral map, on any of these other political considerations, you can't look at Kamala and think that this is really the best they could come up with. That doesn't make any sense. You know, if she were from Ohio, if she were the senator from Michigan, you know, I would think that there's a distinct possibility. But nope, it's because they want Obama term two. That's what they're going for.
You're in the Freedom Hut. This is the Best of Buck Daily Podcast. The top stories of the day from the Buck Sexton Show.
What about the Green New Deal, folks? Wasn't that the big idea that the Democrats rolled out before COVID that we spent all this time talking about? And it became something that you could expect to be asked whether climate change was an existential threat. That's a fancy sounding way. I mean, that's a pseudoscientific way of asking, if you don't do what we want you to do on climate change, you understand that everyone's going to die, right? You understand we're all going to die from climate change. We are all going to die, as I like to remind everybody. It's important to know that. But we're all going to die from climate change. This is insane. This is a belief for crazy people. But they really think it. They really think that unless, you know, California reduces its carbon emissions by, I don't know, 20% or something, or they change it all. That doesn't matter. Unless Californians start living greener lives and we give the federal government more control over industry, we're all going to die from climate change. So I think it's important for us to understand just how they frame the issue normally, like what they say when they talk about climate change, what are they claiming the downside is? And then beyond that, why would they walk away from it now? I mean, if they've established that it's an existential threat, if I told you that I thought there was something that was truly capable of wiping out the human race, and I really believed that, anytime that issue came up, I would say, whatever we have to do to address this, we have to do it without fail. Because what could be more important than the continuation of our species? I think it's very hard to find, right? So they take it to that level with the rhetoric. They say it's an, and they even asked Mike Pence this last night, the Adjourno, whatever her name was. I don't remember. Who cares? Totally replaceable with 1,000 other kind of boring journos. But they asked, is climate change an existential threat? And sure enough, Mike Pence just kind of said, look, you know, there's some things we need to do. The climate's always changing. I like that, by the way. All you have to do, this is the response. When someone says, do you believe in climate change? You just respond, the climate's always changing. It took us a while to get to something, but it's true. It does not concede what they're looking for you to really concede, which is you're going to do what we say about the climate, right? No, you're saying, yeah, the climate changes. Sure, it does. And it drives libs nuts, which is the best part, which is really one of the biggest reasons that I think it's so clear that everybody should support Donald Trump, if nothing else. And there's a lot of other stuff. But just for the way that it would trigger libs alone, getting Donald Trump 4 more years to me feels like a great idea. Just for the way that it would make them completely lose their minds, their heads would explode. It's worth it. It's worth it. So then there's all these other issues. But on the Green New Deal, Mike Pence pointed this out. They're playing another game here where they're saying that Biden's plan is not the Green New Deal. But he also said that it's greatly influenced by the Green New Deal. Well, why not just have it be the Green New Deal? Talking about an existential threat, right? The Journo last night even asked about the existential nature of climate change. Pence pointed this one out, and I have to say he was quite right in doing so. Play eight.
And with regard to banning fracking, I just recommend that people look at the record. You yourself said repeatedly that you would ban fracking. You were the first Senate co-sponsor of the Green New Deal. And while Joe Biden denied the Green New Deal, Susan, thank you for pointing out the Green New Deal is on their campaign website, and as USA Today said, it's essentially the same plan as you co-sponsored with AOC when she submitted it in the Senate. And you just heard the senator say that she's going to resubmit America to the Paris Climate Accord. Look, the American people have always cherished our environment. We'll continue to cherish it. We've made great progress reducing CO2 emissions through American innovation and the development of natural gas through fracking. We don't need a massive $2 trillion Green New Deal that would impose all new mandates on American businesses and American families.
Of course we don't need that. But the Democrat left is psychotic about climate change. It's their religion replacement. It's the religion for people who think they're too smart for religion. That's what climate change is. It's a belief about existential nature, right? It's a belief about why we're here and the end of days. And it has, and then you get more into it, you know, paying for indulgences with the carbon offsets. And it is completely set up in a way that it's an analog of an actual belief in a creator and God, of a religious belief, except the God is Earth, right? The planet. It's like so in that sense, it's a more early stage or primitive religion where it's Earth worship. That's what you actually have with the climate change belief. But they think it's all science. Isn't that fascinating? They believe it's a deeply scientific and sophisticated belief system. But really, at the end of the day, it's because why are we all here? Oh, we exist to save the planet. And the way we're going to save the planet is by making sure that you can't have a plastic grocery bag. No, you have to have one of those dumbass paper bags that will have a hole in it when you're trying to actually carry some milk and eggs back to your home. That's how we're going to save the planet. These petty idiots think that that's really true. They think that, it was the landfills are filling up too fast, and we're choking all the sea life, and the CO2 is all over the air. CO2 is less than 1% of the atmosphere, and yet they believe that it's going to warm up the whole planet. They can't tell you what the warming will actually be, and they can't even measure it accurately 10 years from now. But we're supposed to all change our lives because of what's going to happen 100 years from now. I know, I don't want to get too deep into the how climate change is insane. But the more obvious thing, and I mean climate change catastrophists, this notion that if we don't do everything the left wants us to do, we're all going to die. And that's really it. We're all going to die. I'm not trying to be funny. Well, it is kind of funny, but I'm not exaggerating. That's what they say. Unless people believe in the scientific wisdom of AOC. I mean, I remember in college, I mean, there were people I knew, guys and girls, who were like AOC, and that they were the dumb kid in the class who still spoke a lot and thought everyone should listen to them. I've been around people like that who have a tremendous and unearned confidence in their intellectual abilities and have no self-awareness that they're way beyond their knowledge and their understanding. And that's what AOC is on climate. That's why she had the staffers, right? And this was where we got cow farts. Remember that? We got to stop the cow farts. And oh, no, that was in a working paper that wasn't supposed to be released. Sure. Sure it was. No, the truth is, if you believe in climate change catastrophe, then you have to also understand that you have to get rid of meat. And there have been Democrats who even say this. I believe it was at one of the town halls, which were just kind of in-kind donations to Democrats that CNN and these other channels do, where I think it was Kamala Harris who was asked about whether we should consider banning meat because of the climate change. And she was like, yeah, that's a really, really interesting, which again is what a professor does when you're saying something that's dumb, but the professor's not trying to be mean. So that's a really interesting perspective, they'll say, right? Which is a kind way of saying, what kind of garbage are you saying? But I don't know. Maybe Kamala would want to ban meat if that would get her enough votes and enough donations. Because methane from cows, look, I know it's so dumb that it's hard to even talk about this out loud, but it's true. Methane from cows creates much greater damage to the atmosphere and to the environment, and causes much more warming than what you get from a whole lot of other areas where they're focusing in on CO2. So they've been wrong about this. They're going to be talking about this for another 50 years. I mean, this is not going away. And in 50 years, they're going to keep saying every 10 years we'll be told we have 10 years before it's too late to fix this. And then in 10 years, they'll just, you know, enough time will have elapsed that people will forget that 10 years ago they were saying, look, this is maybe just the circuitry or the wiring of certain human brains, but this is the way it's going to be. This is how it will play out. Oh, and another area where we're treated to a Democrat fantasyland version of what's really going on what will happen. This was a question in the debate. Now, we were so burned. I know many of us were expecting it, but we were so burned by Chris Wallace being so far in the tank for Joe Biden that I think this debate moderator, and Jesse Kelly and I talked about this last night on the first, that this debate moderator was just not as horrible. So you want to think, okay, I guess she's all right. But one of the questions that they asked was, what do you do if Donald Trump doesn't accept the results of the election? What do you do if Donald Trump doesn't accept the results? Who thinks that's going to happen? What evidence is there for that actually being a serious concern? And Vice President Pence did a very good job dealing with this issue. Play 11.
When you talk about accepting the outcome of the election, I must tell you, Senator, your party has spent the last 3.5 years trying to overturn the results of the last election. It's amazing. When Joe Biden was Vice President of the United States, the FBI actually spied on President Trump and my campaign. I mean, there were documents released this week that the CIA actually made a referral to the FBI documenting that those allegations were coming from the Hillary Clinton campaign. And of course, we've all seen the avalanche, what you put the country through for the better part of 3 years until it was found that there was no obstruction, no collusion, case closed. And then Senator Harris, you and your colleagues in the Congress tried to impeach the president of the United States over a phone call. And now Hillary Clinton has actually said to Joe Biden that in her words, under no circumstances should he concede the election. So
who are we really worried about refusing election results? Who is really of concern here for rejecting the expressed will of the American people through a free and fair election? It's Democrats, friends. There was no Republican movement in 2012 to pretend Obama didn't really win, or to unseat him or impeach him or have a special counsel against him. Look at the record with Democrats. You have an impeachment against Donald Trump over the Ukraine phone call, which was just crazy town. The whole thing was crazy town, and we know it. Didn't go anywhere, was never going anywhere, but Nancy Pelosi's nuts. She's a rich, nutty old lady. And you had the 3-year-long special counsel investigation based on Hillary Clinton campaign dirt dossier. Totally false, but that led to a special counsel and all the other stuff. And the whole point of the special counsel was to create the grounds for removing Trump from office through impeachment and removal in the Senate. So that was the point of it. So it's not like it didn't at least give them something, but it didn't give them enough. There were the marches of people saying, not my president, after Trump won. I remember that was happening here in New York and other places. So they just immediately rejected it. There was the special counsel during the Bush administration of Scooter Libby. So this is their favorite tactic. They get a special counsel to go after the top people in the administration as a weapon over the completely farcical, Valerie Plame, she's in so much crap. I was in the CIA. It's crap. The whole thing was nonsense. But, they were going after Bush people, and Bush got very unpopular at that point because of the Iraq war and what was going on in Afghanistan, the war on terror. And nobody was willing to step up and say, this is not meant for this. This is really unconstitutional, actually, to create this body of investigative partisan hacks who aren't really accountable. Anyway, and then you have the 2000 election. Who didn't accept the results? Al Gore. Who kept taking it to court? Al Gore. So you have this long line of actions taken by Democrats meant to ignore election results. But last night, we're at Donald Trump, or rather Mike Pence, has asked, what if Donald Trump doesn't accept the results of the election? Where is there any evidence for that? Hillary Clinton has said Democrats shouldn't accept the results of the election. Democrats have been setting up mail-in balloting intended, in my mind, not only to try to help them win through possibly fraudulent means, but also to create the grounds for rejecting the election results based upon, I've been predicting this too, that they would reject the grounds for the election results based upon the very changes to the election process that they insisted on. Oh, okay. That's where we are. That's where we're heading. And yet Mike Pence had to field that question last night. Isn't it so interesting, friends, the way the journos play the game?
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have been,
juicy.
The podcast would have taken a left turn.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
More Than a Movie is back with season 2 of the award-winning film podcast, and this time with a lot more movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and each week I'm going to talk to the people behind some of my favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the OG spy kid, Alexa Penavega.
You had Carlo Gugino, who's the coolest mom ever. You had Antonio, who's handsome, amazing, charismatic. And then Carmen and Juni. I felt like a lot of other kids felt like this could be me.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Every episode will feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind your favorite films and tap into the history of Latinos in film. Listen to More Than a Movie as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. On Purpose is dedicated to helping you be happier, healthier, and more healed. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how he got comfortable with fear, navigating the changes in relationships, and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern. This conversation shows a never-seen-before side to Orlando Bloom and his unique life journey.
I think we all struggle sometimes to really deeply believe that we are enough, that we're valued, that we're valuable. You know, we're imprinted by our parents from the age of 0 to 7, right? Mm. I'm constantly trying to go like, how do I detach from this idea of is that my baggage? It doesn't look like my baggage. I mean, I know, okay, that's mine. Let's unpack that.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening to the Best of Buck Daily Podcast. For more Buck, head to BuckSexton.com and remember to subscribe to the podcast.
All right, team, very fortunate here to be joined by Mercedes Schlapp. She is a senior advisor of the Trump campaign. You see her on Fox and across all media outlets all the time. Mercedes, thanks for making the time.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm actually live from the Women for Trump bus. It's a big pink bus going through Pennsylvania. We've had several stops here in near Pittsburgh, and it's been a very enthusiastic crowd ready to win and come November.
Tell us about Women for Trump, rather, this whole campaign. Who's a part of it? What's the next itinerary? And what are you telling the ladies out there? Because we all know that particularly suburban women voters are a very coveted demographic in this upcoming battle.
Well, I think one of the phenomenons that we have found when we've been on the road for so much, and we've been on this bus, it's been going for close to 100 days, has been the incredible response from women. Women who are leading many of these field offices, women who are making phone calls, knocking on doors, you know, basically saying, we have to get President Trump reelected. Very concerned about the direction that the Democrats have taken, where they really have abandoned any sort of moderate policies, moved to the far left on so many of the issues. And you know, we really spend a lot of time talking to these women and in the Get Out the Vote effort. So today on the bus, I'm with Katrina Pearson, another senior advisor in the campaign, one of the originals for 2016. Laura Trump is joining us as well. And, you know, I just got to tell you, we feel very strongly that it's important to be in contact with these voters, let them know that the president is incredibly grateful for the work that they're doing. And obviously, during this time that we know that the president has been fighting for us, fighting for America, and it's our turn to fight for him, get him to the finish line, and continue to really expose the far left agenda of Kamala and Joe Biden, which we know even yesterday in the vice presidential debate, Kamala couldn't even answer basic questions like, will they pack the court? You could see a little bubble over her head saying, well, of course we're going to pack the court, but they're not willing to be transparent and honest with the American people.
Speaking of Mercedes Schlapp, senior advisor for the Trump campaign, she's out on the road trying to make things happen so that Trump gets four more years. Mercedes, specifically from the women voters that you're talking to out there, and especially in these swing states where everyone's going to have such a focus for the next few weeks here as we get into the final stretch, what are the biggest things that they're wanting to ask about, and what's the top of their list of concerns right now? I mean, I know it's going to be one of the things but I want to know from what you're hearing, what are they putting at number one, number two?
I would say number one and number two are clearly the economy and ensuring that we're able to build a strong economy, a robust economy. And they've seen President Trump do it once, and they know he's going to do it again. And we've seen, obviously, a lot of progress in that area. In the recent jobs numbers, where we've created over 11 million jobs in the last 4 months. And so the other piece of this, I would say, is safe communities. It's this idea that we've seen a lot of chaos on the streets, and the fact that the president, has made it very clear that law and order is a priority, and that that we don't move forward on defunding the police, that we hone in on community policing, community safety, and that's also another priority. And of course, COVID is on the minds of so many of these women voters. It has been exhausting to raise children during this time, to make ends meet during this time of dealing with the global pandemic. And this idea that Joe Biden really has no plan, as Vice President Mike Pence said yesterday, they're literally plagiarizing what President Trump and the Vice President have already offered and what the plans that we have put in place. And what's so shocking to me is the fact that, I know the Democrats want to use coronavirus, as Jane Fonda said, that this is a God's gift to the Democrats to politicize this whole issue. That's disgraceful. We're in a global pandemic. The president is fighting hard to make sure that we're able to develop the vaccines, to get the therapeutics to market, so that the American people who are afflicted with coronavirus can get better and get healthy. And the other piece of this is that we can't be in lockdown indefinitely. It is really causing a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety for our youth, for our families. We need to be able to reopen our economies and our schools safely and responsibly. And that's what the president is focused on, to ensuring that we can move in that direction, as opposed to Joe Biden, which wants to end some of the media that want to make sure that we all live in fear.
Mercedes, what are we expecting now for the next presidential debate? As of today, we've heard the Biden campaign wants it to be a virtual debate, and the Trump campaign, as of the latest reporting I've seen, says, oh, there's not going to be a virtual debate. What can you tell us?
Well, what was shocking was that I call them the Communist Commission of Presidential Debates. I mean, they've got like never Trumpers on there. And one of the things that what I'm finding with them is that they literally made this unilateral decision on moving forward with a virtual debate without even talking to the campaigns about it. Just think about that. And that's what's so disturbing, is the fact that they're looking to protect Joe Biden. They know that the president had a very strong night. They know that Mike Pence won the debate yesterday. And so at this point, it just seems that they have no interest in ensuring that this conversation and this important conversation happens between the two presidents, between the two candidates, I should say. And so I think it's important to really understand that this was a unilateral decision made by the commission. They did not discuss it with the campaigns, and that is incredibly problematic. So we're hoping, and what we're looking to do, is to move the debate a week later, have the two debates, one October 22nd, the next October 29th, and let's have that discussion where the American people can see these two men in person being able to, describe what their visions are for America. And that is, I think, what the goal is at this time.
Mercedes Schlapp, senior advisor for the Trump campaign, out there on the trail, on the bus, doing the work. Mercedes, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
More Than a Movie is back with season two. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.